Welcome to the second Super Bowl preview episode of A Colts Podcast, brought to you by Sports Illustrated and the Horseshoe Huddle. My name's Brandon. I'm joined here by your co-host, my best friend, Andrew Moore. The Super Bowl is here. Football season is over. And I'm excited to talk a little bit about...
There you go.
Okay. You're just pointing at the Super Bowl symbol. Yeah. Hey, everybody. Andrew wants you to know that I put in a cool Super Bowl symbol onto the stream. Andrew, buddy, welcome. Hello. How are you? Andrew's not feeling well, guys. So if, you know, he just is making faces, running off the screen, who knows?
We hope it doesn't get to that point, but I'm doing good, man. This week was my fiance's birthday, so happy birthday
to Danny. Happy birthday, Danny.
We celebrated last night, went out to dinner. She wanted to do a little bit of shopping after we stuffed our faces with food. So that was a fun time. But hey, it's Super Bowl week. Exciting matchup, I think. It's not the normal matchup. We've got a young quarterback up and coming with Joe Burrow and his team against a quarterback with his first Super Bowl appearance with the Rams. So no stats, Matt. I am not hungover. Thank you for that. That's Brandon. Brandon's the one that has multiple day hangovers. But hey, I'm excited to be here. Excited to talk about Super Bowl. And then we're a Colts podcast. We're going to talk a little Colts as well.
We are a Colts podcast. I mean, just multiple instances lately where somebody's like, "Oh, you do a podcast?" I'm like, "Yeah, it's a Colts podcast." They're like, "What is it?" It's a Colts podcast. What's the name of it? Hey, Colts. It's like, dude, sweet. What does mine say? Dude, what does mine say? It's classic joke. So, all right, yeah, Super Bowl. Los Angeles Rams, -200 favorite over the Cincinnati Bengals, +170, spreads at 4, over under 48.5. Coin toss, heads or tails, -105. Who knows? Color of the Gatorade, look below. There's no way I put clear water for it. Yeah, I did. Apparently, that's +250. Anyway, that's not important. Maybe we'll talk about fun prop bets first. But, Andrew, we got Joe Burrow, Matt Stafford, young guy versus a guy who has struggled. Orange is always my pick, Matt. He's had a struggling career. He's very good. But, I mean, I know the Rams are the favorite, but you got to think all of the pressure is on that Rams football team, don't you think?
I would think so, because the Bengals weren't even expected to be here. I mean, there was a point towards the end of the season where if you looked at the Super Bowl odds, the Colts had a better chance and the Colts had better odds to make the Super Bowl than the Cincinnati Bengals did. So I do think
while the Bengals were holding down first in the AFC North.
Right. I do think there is more pressure on the Los Angeles Rams. Not only is this team legitimately going all in because of how many signings they have. I don't think they have a first round pick until 2024, something like that. So they go and sign all these big names, all these free agents. They went out and trade the farm to get Matthew Stafford. So the pressure is on them to compete. And if they don't win again, this would be Sean McVay, his second Super Bowl that he's lost already. So yeah. I definitely think the pressure is on the Rams. I think that Rams have more talent, but as we've learned this postseason, you can't bet against Joe Burrow.
You cannot bet against Joe Burrow. It's unbelievable. And I mean, I was kind of listening to yesterday's episode of Pat and him, and he and AJ are talking. And he goes, you know, these young guys, this young team, they've got no, AJ called it, or somebody called it, you know, no mental scars of the failures of the past. And Stafford, you know, he's had so many years and such little success in the playoffs. And McVay, like, he's already got one Super Bowl loss. The Rams, they, like you said, they went all in on this Super Bowl. Odell, same deal with him, no success. I mean, I feel like everybody on that team, minus maybe Von Miller, you know, is feeling the pressure heavy. And Aaron Donald, for God's sake. I mean, it's unbelievable what this team has got to be feeling right now. I'm surprised the line is this far apart, even, you know, which it's not a crazy line, -200 and +270. But, I mean, just because the Bengals just keep proving good teams wrong, you know, they beat the Chiefs. I think they beat the Titans, right? They're the ones that beat the Titans out. Mm-hmm. I mean, they beat good football teams to get to the Super Bowl. I think it's almost disrespectful to the Bengals to be at that minus 200. But here it is, Andrew. Can Matthew Stafford have success against that Bengals defense? What do you think?
So I think it's going to be interesting. And normally you would think, oh, Matthew Stafford, Bengals defense, he's going to carve them up. But I think... And I actually saw a stat the other day about this, where against the blitz, Matthew Stafford this year has been absolutely phenomenal. You blitz Matthew Stafford, he's absolutely going to make you pay. But when you don't blitz Matthew Stafford and you're able to get pressure with either just a three-man or a four-man rush, it definitely takes its toll. And I think even I was drawing back to last year. Obviously, it's a little different. He was on a very bad Detroit Lions team last year, but the Colts had success doing that. The Colts really didn't blitz Matthew Stafford that much, and they got success. And then this year, the Colts really didn't blitz Matthew Stafford that much when the Rams came to Lucas Oil, and they were able to get after Matthew Stafford. Matthew Stafford didn't have a huge game against the Indianapolis Colts. No. And the Bengals, one of the main things about this Bengals defense is they don't really like to blitz. They like to rush. A lot of times you'll see them just rush only three and drop eight guys in coverage. That's exactly what they did against the Kansas City Chiefs in the AFC Championship game in that second half. You typically think, oh, we really need to get after Patrick Mahomes and really force him into mistakes. The Bengals did the opposite in that second half. They put all their guys in coverage, only rushed three, and the Chiefs couldn't do anything. So I think we could very well see that on Sunday, see the Cincinnati Bengals kind of implore that same strategy, not really blitz too often or send too much pressure, but instead drop their guys back in coverage and make Matthew Stafford try to beat them through the air through that coverage. And so far this year, he hasn't been that great against unless you are blitzing against him.
Yeah, and I mean, you've seen all those interceptions as of late, and if there's a lot of defenders back there and he starts forcing throws, you're going to start seeing Matt Stafford throw interceptions in the Super Bowl on the biggest stage there is. Terribly, terribly nervous for Matt Stafford. I want him to win. I do want the Rams to win almost just because Matt Stafford and Aaron Donald and kind of Sean McVay. I think McVay will have a lot of chances probably throughout his career. But Matt Stafford, about wrapped up in chances, and same with Joe Burrow. I mean, he's going to have, hopefully, who knows, you know, now that, you know, I was listening to Good Morning Football the other day, and, you know, hey, I can't remember one of the main guys, not Peter Schrager, the other guy,
Kyle Brandt
was saying, hey, you know, every quarterback that gets to a Super Bowl early in their career thinks they're going to get to another one. Ask Aaron Rodgers how easy it is to just get back to another one. Ask Russell Wilson, who went to two out of his first 3 years, how easy it is to get back to another one. It's hard to get here. So Joe Burrow, I expect him to come out not giving a shit that he's got his whole career ahead of him.
So I've got real quick, I've got this, okay. I found the stat. So Matthew Stafford against the blitz this season has 16 touchdowns, zero interceptions. Fantastic against the blitz. When Matthew Stafford is against four or fewer pass rushers, 31 TDs, but 18 interceptions.
Yikes. Stats, Matt, where were you on that one?
So the Bengals, they really like to do that. They like to rush three, drop eight, and really, instead of forcing you into that pressure, they say, we trust our cover guys, go out there and try to beat us. And that's exactly what they did against Kansas City. And I fully expect them to do that on Sunday against the Rams as well.
Now let's go to the other side, to the coolest dude in the NFL, Joe Burrow. Will the Bengals offensive line be able to protect Joe Burrow against Aaron Donald and Von Miller? Short answer, no. Andrew, let's hear a long answer. You're good at those.
I don't see how they can. No. I really don't. And this is why if we were doing an X factor, this would be my X factor. Because if the offensive line of the Bengals can hold up, which they did against the Kansas City Chiefs, and the Kansas City Chiefs have I mean, Chris Jones, who I would consider up there with DeForest Buckner right behind Aaron Donald as best interior pass rusher in the league. And they were able to hold off the Kansas City Chiefs. And you saw the Bengals be able to climb back into the game and have success. But Aaron Donald's a different animal. And the Kansas City Chiefs don't necessarily, I mean, they added Melvin Ingram, but Melvin Ingram's not Von Miller. Von Miller, even though he's 31, 32 years old, he's still out there getting it done.
There's a lot of people think he's still playing some of his best football. He didn't start out that way this year. But there's a lot of people saying, you know, the Broncos got fleeced.
Right. And he's doing very well. And then Leonard Floyd on the other side. I mean, Leonard Floyd's no slouch either as a pass rusher. So the Bengals offensive line is going to have a lot to deal with. And we've seen Joe Burrow come back even and overcome being sacked and getting a ton of pressure. I mean, he did it against the Tennessee Titans, but I don't think the Los Angeles Rams are necessarily going to leave the door open like the Tennessee Titans did in the AFC divisional round.
How many times was Joe Burrow sacked during the AFC championship game? Wasn't it something ridiculous? Didn't they turn it around? It was like only once or twice.
I thought it was only once or twice. Yeah. I think so. So, I mean, you
like
can,
you said, but though, it's different animals,
completely different animal. And you can just see, especially how the way Aaron Donald played in that NFC championship game. And he made it known. He said, like, I've got all the Pro Bowls. I've got all the All Pros. I've got the Defensive Player of the Year. He doesn't have the ring, and he wants that ring. He wants that Super Bowl championship.
He's got the 99 in Madden.
Right. To Aaron Donald, that's really the only thing he hasn't accomplished. He's going to be a Hall of Famer. It's just you're going to see, I think, just a different Aaron Donald. And I'm sure the Bengals will try their best to double and triple team him at times. But again, he's not the only pass rusher. You're going to have Von Miller on the edge. You're going to have Leonard Floyd on the other side. And it'll be just how Joe Burrow can handle that and how the offensive line can really hold up against this vaunted pass rush that the Los Angeles Rams have.
Now, another interesting question on matchups during this game, Andrew. The superstar corner against the young budding star wide receiver, Ja'Marr Chase, taking on Jalen Ramsey. I imagine Ramsey's going to be mirroring him pretty much the whole game. Tried to against Deebo Samuel. I'll tell you what, if Deebo Samuel didn't tell you, I don't think these young stars, these young up-and-coming stars give a damn who Jalen Ramsey is, how good Jalen Ramsey is, what he's done in the past. They're not afraid to attack him. And you didn't see the 49ers afraid to attack Jalen Ramsey a couple weeks ago. I don't think Joe Burrow is going to have much of a problem attacking Jalen Ramsey either.
Yeah, and I don't think the Bengals should necessarily stay away from Jalen Ramsey, but right. I do think what's working in the Bengals' favor here is that outside of Jalen Ramsey, the cover guys for the Los Angeles Rams are kind of suspect in some areas. So you have T. Higgins, who is a very good wide receiver, and we saw T. Higgins have pretty good success against the Kansas City Chiefs because the Chiefs were rolling coverage over to Ja'Marr Chase and doubling him up, and T. Higgins was able to take that over there. And then you also see in the slot Tyler Boyd. Tyler Boyd is no slouch either. He's a very good third wide receiver to have. So Joe Burrow's going to have options. I mean, Joe Mixon out of the backfield even. So it's not going to be like Ja'Marr Chase is his only guy. And if Jalen Ramsey shuts him down, the entire offense of the Bengals shuts down. There's other pieces there. And I don't think it's necessarily something that's going to have, I mean, obviously it's going to have an effect. And I think Ja'Marr Chase can have some success because he is a bigger guy. He does have a more physical play style for a wide receiver as well. So I think he'll get some catches, but I don't necessarily see Ja'Marr Chase going off for 170, 180 yards and a couple TDs. The matchup that, and I think on the other side, which I didn't put in the notes. You go ahead.
In regards to Ja'Marr Chase, the problem is it's not just going to be, it's not going to be just Ja'Marr Chase versus Jalen Ramsey throwing the football, because they are going to get find creative ways to put it, to put the ball in Ja'Marr Chase's hand, just like the 49ers were with Deebo Samuel. So
it's not necessarily
the Rams aren't going to necessarily have the opportunity to make sure 100% of the time it is Ja'Marr Chase versus Jalen Ramsey if the Bengals get creative. Where were you getting ready to head?
Well, I was going to say, I think one of the, maybe a bigger matchup will be how the Bengals can contain the best wide receiver in the league this year in Cooper Kupp, because the Bengals don't necessarily have a Jalen Ramsey on their team, a guy that can just go out there and shut down the opposing team's best wide receiver. Cooper Kupp has shown that he can absolutely go around and pretty much dominate any cornerback, any safety, any cover guy that you put on him. So obviously they're going to put a lot of attention to Cooper Kupp, but you can't necessarily put all the attention on Cooper Kupp, because then you have Odell that's really ascended because of all that attention going to Cooper Kupp, finally being on a team where Matthew Stafford can get in the ball. We're seeing Odell have success as well. So I think that's going to be as big of key as any for the Cincinnati defense, is if you're not going to rush Matthew Stafford, which I don't think they will, I think they'll probably do the same thing they did against Kansas City. You have to make sure you don't let Cooper Kupp get free, because I mean, Cooper Kupp is one of the best route runners in the entire NFL. And if you don't get home, or you do make the play last as long as possible, chances are Cooper Kupp will find a way open.
Yeah, and Stats Matt saying Hilton said today he's excited to take on Kupp. Sure he is. That's what he's supposed to say. Good for him saying it.
He's a competitor.
Yeah, exactly. He's supposed to be excited, but he's gonna have a hard day. And Andrew, that's where I wanted to go next too, before we get into predictions, was the weapons that Matt Stafford has. And like you said, they don't have the Bengals don't have a Ramsey. And as good as the Bengals' weapons are, they still don't have a Cooper Kupp and an Odell Beckham Jr. Okay, I mean, they were lights out against the 49ers. They are impossible. It is impossible to cover both of them. And like you said, if you're not getting after Matt Stafford, Cooper Kupp finds ways to get open. Matt Stafford got open. I think I'm starting to mix up games and think of a Joe Burrow scramble to Ja'Marr Chase. But either way, Cooper Kupp, if the play breaks down and people start scrambling, he's going to find a gap and he's going to hurt the Bengals. Cooper Kupp is not going to be denied the yards. He's going to score a touchdown. Thank you. Please remove that, Andrew, while I'm talking.
Well, I get what you're saying though. It happens. The Rams just have so many weapons. Cooper Kupp, Odell, and then you talk about like Tyler Higbee as a tight end. Tyler Higbee is a very capable tight end. Now, I remember Higbee got injured in the NFC Championship game. Maybe it wasn't the NFC Championship game, but I don't know if Higbee tore it, if he's out for the Super Bowl or not, but if not, I mean, Higbee's a good option.
If I remember correctly, it wasn't looking too good for him. Okay, but I could be totally wrong.
Van Jefferson is also a wide receiver that if you let him, he can get deep. And I've seen multiple times where Matthew Stafford has just put it on a rope and all the attention's on Kupp and Odell. There goes Van Jefferson running down the seam, one-on-one. Stafford puts the ball right on him, and all of a sudden it's like, oh shoot, we just gave up a 50, 60 yard play because we weren't accounting for Van Jefferson. So, and then out of the backfield, Cam Akers, Sony Michel, the Rams just have so many weapons. And that's why I think it's tough for this Bengals defense. But also I'm going to keep harping on this, because I really truly think that on this side of the ball, this will be the key to the game. It's going to be whether or not this Bengals defense can sustain and cover while still being able to get some pressure on Matthew Stafford with only three or four guys. Name we haven't mentioned that was excellent this year as a pass rusher for the Cincinnati Bengals? Trey Hendrickson.
Yeah.
Trey Hendrickson had 14 sacks this year, and I'm sure he's going to be pinning his ears back, wanting to get himself some Matthew Stafford to bring him down. I think that's going to be a big key as well.
I believe I was starting to say Cooper Kupp. there's a DraftKings bet right now. If you bet on up to $20 on first touchdown score, you get your $20 back if they at least score at some point during the game. So Cooper Kupp, $20 on him to be first touchdown scorer. Safe bet to at least get your money back. Andrew, I think you made a good point that we kind of glossed over there as well. The Rams running game. The Rams running game is sizably, is largely greatly better than the Chiefs running game, I believe. It's no Titans, but when you know it's coming, you know, all the time from the Titans, that's almost easier to defend, especially in a game when you have a quarterback and a Cooper Kupp and an Odell Beckham Jr. So I think the mixing up of the run game and the pass game could really shake things up for the Rams offense. So let's get to it. Let's go ahead and talk predictions, Andrew. My first reaction was Rams. I'm with Vegas. I'm cheering for the Rams. I really am pulling. I have some deep feeling in my belly, though, that the pressure is just going to be too much. So my money's going to go on the Rams. My hopes are going to go on the Rams. And again, I am going to be so happy no matter who wins, because it's nobody that's won in the last 20 years. I don't, you know what I mean? It's not Tom Brady. I don't even have anything against Patrick Mahomes. But I'm going to go Rams. What did we say the spread was? Four. Let's say Rams win, Bengals cover. And of course the over is going to hit.
So that's initially what I was thinking going into this week. And I've really thought about this a lot. Just the different matchups that are going to be happening in this Super Bowl. And honestly, I keep coming back to the fact that there's just something about Joe Burrow.
Yeah.
There's just something about Joe Burrow that in the biggest moments, he shines. And this is it. And I know there's suspect with the offensive line. The Rams have all these weapons. There's just something about Joe Burrow. I'm picking the Bengals to win the Super Bowl. I'm picking the Bengals to overcome this curse that they have. So obviously I'm picking them to cover. And I'm going to say the over as well. Final score, I am going to say that it's going to be Bengals 27, Rams 23. 24. I'm going to go 23.
You got to say 24 because McPherson's going to walk out and say, well, looks like we're winning the Super Bowl. Goes out, kicks a game winner. Guess we're going to go win the Super Bowl.
See, I think
27-24 Rams. Stats, Matt.
I think the Bengals will drive down the field and get a score, and then with I don't know, maybe a minute and change left, and I think there's going to be a mistake by Matthew Stafford there at the end.
That could be, but I'm going Rams. Going Rams. Watching with Chris at Chris's house. So
he's a Rams fan.
He's a Rams fan. Go Rams. Who knows? Maybe I'll text Chris and tell him come in here and give us a score prediction. Former podcaster himself, you know, his microphone. So, so yeah, I don't know. I don't know who's going to win. You're talking big shit about the Bengals win. Are you going to bet on? You going to bet a money line bet on the Bengals?
Probably.
Okay.
Or I might do an alternate spread of the Bengals, whichever I get better odds with. I like that. I love the alternate spread.
The old bets. Alternate spread. I didn't do enough alternate spread parlays this year because, I mean, easy money.
Hey, we're not going to talk about the streak I'm on right now because I don't want to jinx
you
it.
You just talked about it.
What streak? Never heard of it.
The streak in your underwear today.
Allegedly.
Got him. So, Andrew, news on the Colts front. We have lost our former defensive coordinator, and we have gained our new one. Probably the one that both of us said we expected least the night of the podcast. At least I did. Man, every take I had about this defensive coordinator situation was a bad one. And the Colts have hired Gus Bradley as the new defensive coordinator. First reaction to the hire, what'd you think?
First initial reaction
not first reaction to the hire, but first reaction when you heard it's looking like Gus Bradley, because by the time it was actually announced, we already knew.
A little surprised because I didn't think Gus Bradley was high on the Colts priority list. But then as things started to come out, it makes sense. It really does make sense as to why the Colts wanted him. And maybe this is probably kind of our last point, but we can start out with it of basically what the Colts really liked about Gus Bradley. And in the interview, things have came out. Gus Bradley really, really impressed Frank Reich, because while this was a Colts brass decision, Frank Reich was the one doing the interviewing. Chris Ballard was down in Mobile, Alabama at the Senior Bowl last week. So this was a Frank Reich hire. Gus Bradley really impressed with his leadership skills and talking about wanting to be someone that really the players relate to. And he's done that his entire career, whether he's been with Seattle, with the Chargers in LA and San Diego, the Las Vegas Raiders. That's something that's really resonated with Gus Bradley, is he's really been able to relate to his players. His players really like him and gravitate to him. And that's something that Frank Reich and the Colts brass really saw. And another thing is that the scheme that Gus Bradley runs isn't necessarily going to have to turn over this entire defense. It's going to be very similar to what the Colts ran with Matt Eberflus. A lot of the same principles. The turnover still a key. Getting after the quarterback, hustle, going to the ball, all of those different things.
I didn't realize Matt Eberflus's defense involved getting after the quarterback.
Well, he's allegedly he wanted it to be a successful top five unit. They needed to get after the quarterback, but yeah, I think a lot of those things, where his leadership wanting to be have toughness with the group,
yeah,
at resonating with players, and it's not going to be a complete change of what the Colts have already been running, because they've got good players on this defense. You don't need to reinvent the wheel; just some tweaking is needed, I think.
So, Andrew, first reaction back to mine. I was surprised. I thought, immediately that I was an idiot. A lot of people are starting to pick out some players that might end up in Indy. Could want to end up in Indy because of this hire. Something I found interesting was, a little man named Phil Rivers that had a conversation with, Frank Reich about a Gus Bradley. And apparently that's been reported. I don't even remember who I saw post this, but apparently, Phil Rivers might have had some big pull and persuasion as well with Frank Reich. Did you hear about that?
Not only with Frank Reich, but with Gus Bradley, because Gus Bradley worked and was in San Diego and L.A. for 4 years when Philip Rivers was there. So, yes, Gus Bradley and Philip Rivers did talk, because Phil asked him, are you thinking about it? Are you considering it? And Gus said, yeah. Well, Phil talked about the locker room and how great of a culture it is. He talked about the coaching staff and really the organization in general. He said all the way down from Jim Irsay to the equipment managers, the things he heard from Philip Rivers was just top notch. And he said the moment that he got into the building, he felt that it was something special. And we hear a lot of guys say that when it just feels different in Indianapolis. So that's another attraction. That's kind of what really attracted Gus Bradley to Indy. Not only that he doesn't have to rebuild this defense, because when you think about it, he got to Seattle in 2009. The Seahawks weren't very good then. He had to kind of revamp the defense, turned it into the Legion of Boom. Then he was the head coach of the Jacksonville Jaguars. We won't talk about that. Didn't go too well. But as a defensive coordinator, he's had success. When he went to the Chargers, weren't the greatest defense, he was able to build that back up. The Las Vegas Raiders last year didn't start out hot, but you saw towards the end of the year, you remember their pass rush and their young corners were very good. So Gus Bradley doesn't have to start from scratch here at Indianapolis. He's got Pro Bowlers at each level of the field, and he can kind of just add to that.
I didn't feel like there was any shortage of interest for this job for the candidates that we could have picked from, you know, because we do have a lot of talent on the defensive side of the ball. So it says a lot, I think, that Frank was so confident in the choice of a Gus Bradley. I'm excited to see how it goes. I'm excited for a little new, you know, a new face on the defensive side of the football. We'll see how the players react. I keep reading about this, Andrew, the LEO position. Keep seeing something about the LEO position with Gus Bradley. What is it? Why is Quiddy Pay going to be the lead of it? Why is he going to be that guy? What does it mean for those of us who don't know?
So for a full breakdown, you can head on over to Horseshoe Huddle because I did a full article about this past week. Little self-plug there. But the Leo position in a Gus Bradley defense is more of a hybrid outside linebacker defensive end position. Obviously, L is for linebacker, E is for end. It's a guy that's really focused on rushing the passer. That's pretty much their sole purpose, whether their hands in the dirt like a defensive end, whether they're in a standing stance like an outside linebacker. It's really all about getting pressure on the quarterback. And it's really interesting with this position because a lot of times they will line up as the wide end on the defensive line, but they're not necessarily locked into that position. They can go to either side. Typically it is on the weak side, but if there is another spot along the defensive line, the Leo can go there if they see it or read it or see that weakness and rush from that position as well. So that's, we could see Quiddy Pay move around a little bit. And why I think Quiddy Pay is the perfect fit for this is because generally the Leo position is for a smaller, faster defensive end. Quiddy Pay is definitely not the biggest defensive end. He's around 260, which isn't small, but it's not huge either. And he, if you see his explosion, you see how fast Quiddy Pay is. I think he ran the 40 last year in like 4.57, which for a defensive end, that's pretty damn quick.
Yeah.
Quiddy Pay can be placed, and this is where the Colts can really use Quiddy Pay's pass rushing skill set to their advantage, is putting him in those advantageous areas to be able to just focus on getting after the quarterback.
How do you adjust for that? Just from a run on a run defense side, you know, because a lot of times, you know, the job of that end is to contain, whether it be a quarterback or a running back. Just real quick to interrupt you there. Sorry. What's the solution for some, you know, containment if you're just letting a guy loose like that?
So I like that you brought this up, because the Leo position and the way that the defense is lined up, they also have to be able to make run stops, because typically you're not going to have a linebacker over to that side to help you out in the running game. That's why I think, and that's why I don't think it's necessarily you have to have like a Kamoko Touré out there, because I saw a lot of people saying that. And while he could fit, I think Quiddy Pay is the bigger fit, because Quiddy Pay doesn't necessarily need a backup or a linebacker there to back him up when the run goes his way. We saw numerous times this year where the run would start to one side, Quiddy Pay would be on the backside, running back would try to cut it back, boom, there's number 51 in there to wrap you up and bring you down. We know that Quiddy Pay can play the run. So that's why the Leo position, they still need to be able to wrap guys up, make tackles for loss, tackles around the line of scrimmage in the running game, because if you're just, your main job is to rush the passer in that Leo position. Right. But if that is your absolute sole focus and you're completely abandoning the run, teams are absolutely going to gash you to that side if you can't stop the run. That's just smart football. So that's why I think Quiddy Pay is another reason why he can really flourish in this spot. Now, some previous guys that had this Leo spot under Gus Bradley, when you go back to the Legion of Boom days with Seattle, Chris Clements, very good defensive end. Bruce Irvin, very good linebacker and rushing the passer.
Never heard of him.
When you go to the Chargers, normally it was Melvin Ingram. Ingram, great pass rusher. Sometimes it was Joey Bosa, but most of the time it was Melvin Ingram. Last year with the Raiders, Yannick Ngakoue, a great pass rusher, had over 10 sacks last year in this position. So typically you see the defensive line, and especially this Leo position in particular, really have success. And I think that's why the Colts, I mean, they're so bullish on Quiddy Pay, and really we are too, because we saw that it's there. We saw him start to come on late in the year. So I can't wait to see what he can do his second year in the league, training all offseason. The game's already slowed down for him. I think you're going to see a big jump from Quiddy Pay here in year two, and being in that Leo position really just exemplifies that.
And I assume the dum-dums that are against Quiddy Pay playing this Leo position are going to be the ones that, you know, think that his stat numbers not being higher this year as a rookie, you know, is a bigger deal than it really is. Would you agree with that?
Oh, yeah. I mean, when I posted the article we posted on Facebook, there were a couple comments on there saying how Quiddy Pay was a bust. So there's going to be some people out there. Yeah, oh, yeah.
Quiddy Pay bust. Hey, maybe he is. I'm not saying Quiddy Pay is not a bust yet, but it sure as hell too early to say he is.
The way this defensive alignment is for the what I think it's going to look like in this defense, having Quiddy Pay at that Leo, obviously you're going to have DeForest Buckner at the 3-tech, Grover Stewart at the 1-tech. And then on the other side is for a more of a bigger defensive end, a guy that's around 270 to 80 pounds, big, long.
Oh,
Mr. Dio Odangbo.
Bro.
Yeah. If he fits perfect in there. So I saw a lot of people saying Kamoko Touré could fit in the Leo role. And I think he could in some obvious passing situations. Maybe this helps the Colts actually bring Touré back. However, I saw a lot of people saying it was Ben Banigou. I think the ship has sailed on Ben Banigou. So I don't know about that one, but Touré could be back. Obviously, this could be somewhere where Tyquan Lewis fits into that big end. But yes, I definitely think, as I think Matt was talking about it earlier about Melvin Ingram, I do think the Colts will make some outside signings and try to add a veteran pass rusher to this group.
Yeah.
Whether it's at the Leo position, the big end position, they just need more pass rush help in general.
I just think the irony of stats, Matt, saying those people are called stat watchers and not game watchers is just very funny.
Well, Matt's both.
So, Andrew, we talked a little bit about it just with the Phil Rivers conversation, but what do you think drew Bradley to Indy and what drew Indy to Bradley overall?
I really think it is just that number one, that leadership, because the Colts always talk about having good leaders in their locker room, and Gus Bradley has shown that. The guys in Las Vegas, and then obviously what Philip Rivers said how players just gravitate to him. He's not a guy, he's a guy that takes things seriously, but it's not necessarily a guy that really creates poor relationships with his players. It's someone that he loves to coach up guys. And then I think lastly was just for the Colts anyway, again, it's not going to be a total makeover, because while the Colts, and the thing is, we say the Colts ran a cover two. They ran so many more coverages. So maybe a base cover two to a base cover three is what Gus Bradley runs, which he even said this week, if people say we run a cover three, then we want them to say that, because that allows us to do a bunch more things. But really, you're going to see some more single high safety probably with Julian Blackman. There is going to still be some two high with Blackman and Willis back there. Bradley doesn't necessarily blitz a ton, but he's not opposed to blitzing. He said there's been times where they blitz 20 to 25 times a game. It really just depends on the game plan. So obviously you'd like to get pressure with just your front four, but if you can't, Bradley's not opposed to going in there and blitzing when he needs to. So
secondary's got to perform if that's the plan.
Right.
They have absolutely to do their job in that first few seconds.
Right. And this is, and I think something too is kind of going along with not having to make over the entire defense. Really, the philosophy of this defense is going to be the same. They're really going to put an emphasis on turnovers. From Chris Ballard, you hear him say it all the time. Frank Reich, it's something he believes in. And in Gus Bradley, the same way. They want this defense to continue to produce turnovers at a high rate. Really high energy. I mean, and that's obviously.
Well, Andrew, if you get a lot of turnovers, that means you're too reliant on the turnovers. all of your defensive successes are flukes.
As some people would say. But I don't expect this Colts defense to fall off a cliff with turnovers. They're still going to be producing them at a high rate. I fully believe that. the Gus Bradley's defense are always high energy. You can think back to all the guys in his past defenses, always high energy. And then this is the main thing. I think they really brought Gus Bradley in because he's had success getting pressure on the quarterback. That's what the Colts really have been focusing on all offseason. They know that they need to be better on offense through the air, and they need to be better on defense pressuring the quarterback. And that's what Gus Bradley is going to be in charge of.
Other Colts news. Ed Dodds and Morocco Brown have interviewed with the Steelers for their soon to be vacant GM position. Are you getting a feeling that Morocco Brown's got a better chance at that position? Because that's what I'm starting to feel.
I think it just takes
longer to make that decision with a GM.
I don't really have a feeling either way, but I do think this. I mean, we've seen Ed Dodds be so picky in where he's going to go. He's turned down multiple offers before. I don't think
the Steelers' job is one you turned down.
The Steelers' job would not be one. It's such a high class organization. An organization you can't get much better job security in the NFL than with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They've got a solid defense. Obviously, they need a quarterback. But there's pieces there, so the cupboard isn't bare. I think if Ed Dodds gets offered, this could be the one that he takes. And Morocco Brown, again, a rising star. You know how much I admire Morocco Brown. I think he's absolutely great. So either one of those guys, it'd be a huge loss for the Colts. But I think if they do get offered, they would take that spot.
Yeah, I agree. Ed Dodds is the one that I thought when I saw him interviewing for that, I was like, can you just imagine how Chris Ballard's feeling like right now? He's like, I mentored your ass for all these years. You're going to go take the Pittsburgh Steelers job. How do you fall into the Pittsburgh Steelers job? It's just one of those situations where, you know, every once in a while when you're one of those names that's getting thrown around for GM positions or head coaching positions, you know, like usually those are for dumpster fire teams. They're not good situations that you're being thrust into. And you get an opportunity with an organization like the Pittsburgh Steelers. Really happy for both of those guys. I hope it's one of them for them. Hope it's neither of them for us. But you know, I'm a selfish guy.
There will be something interesting to watch, though. If Morocco Brown does end up getting the GM position for the Pittsburgh Steelers, because he is a minority, and with the new rule that the NFL imposed, I think it was last year, if he does get that position, the Colts would get 2 third-round compensatory picks for kind of helping a minority candidate come up through the ranks and achieve a high ranking
as did the 49ers.
Yes, the 49ers got that because we'll talk about it in a second. Mike McDaniel becoming the head coach of the Dolphins. But yes, it's so that's something as far as if Morocco Brown did leave, that's something the Colts would receive in return.
All right, and former Raiders defensive back coach Ron Miles could be joining the staff.
That's a guy that's really the only assistant as far as defensive wise that we've heard of that could possibly be joining. Obviously, they're still trying to work through all that, but he's a guy that has really helped defensive backs around the league. I mean, he took that young secondary for the Raiders and really helped them climb and improve throughout the year. So with James Rose work with Rocky Sin and then Isaiah Rogers, Kenny Moore, you could see Millis kind of build on that. So I think that's a very real possibility, and it would be a great get for the Indianapolis Colts to be their DB coach.
Nice. Love that. Senior offensive assistant Press Taylor hired by the Jaguars to be their next offensive coordinator.
So Press Taylor was a guy that came over last year because originally in 2020, he was the QB coach for the Eagles. Carson Wentz came over. Press Taylor came over as well. So you see that connection there with Doug Peterson. So it's not really a surprise. Something that actually just happened before we came on the air is Mike Groh, the Colts wide receiver coach, actually was hired by the Giants as their wide receiver coach. So the Colts now have an opening at wide receiver. You think maybe Reggie Wayne, you getting that itch to come back and coach?
I don't think so.
Not saying that's going to happen, but yeah. So the Colts now have, along with trying to find a whole new defensive staff full of assistants, they now have two open assistant positions on the offensive side of the ball.
Real quick, before we go to news around the league, the long-awaited photo. I'm sure Stats Matt is just waiting to see this. Look at that beauty that's going to be going up in my man cave one day. Signed Jonathan Taylor jersey in that blue and white frame. Just an absolute beauty. Round of applause for me. You know what I'm saying? And my fiance for actually being the one that really wanted that. Couldn't believe it. And
how much did that cost you?
I'm not going to talk about money on the show, Andrew, but it was not cheap. And I'm pretty sure my fiance would make out with Jonathan Taylor right in front of my face. So that tells you anything. Pat McAfee just brought Wiz Khalifa onto a show. That's wild. Stat that. All right. News around the league. Dolphins hire former 49ers offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel as their new head coach. Okay.
I actually think this is a pretty decent hire.
Shake hands with Shanahan and you get a head coaching job.
Pretty Shanahan or Sean McVay. But right. I think this is a good hire because what Mike McDaniel did is he really, number one, he's very good at scheming up the running game, which I think mm-hmm. the Dolphins need to take some pressure off of Tua. But I also think that Mike McDaniel is really going to emphasize Tua Tagovailoa's strengths in that offense and not necessarily stick to one thing, but kind of use a little bit of mobility for Tua, use the different things that he's good at to try to help him reach the best level that he can. So I like the hire. I like Mike McDaniel. He's a funny guy. So good for him.
Most hilarious hiring, I think, so far in the league. Jaguars hire former Eagles head coach Doug Peterson as their new head coach. Saw a hilarious video where that man really loves ice cream and is always offering up ice cream to the team. He's going to be in a hot town. There's going to be a lot of ice cream had in Jacksonville. I suppose it makes sense for a Trevor Lawrence, mentor. What do you think about that hire?
I honestly like it. I think Doug Peterson is actually a good coach. He got a lot of flack in Philly.
Yeah, he got a bad rap at the end of that.
But I think he is a pretty good coach. I mean, he did get them a Super Bowl after all. And being able to pair up with Trevor Lawrence, that's what I think. Just for Trevor's sake, they just need a coaching staff with stability, kill all the drama, and let him actually work on his game.
Just think it's a huge miss for the city of Jacksonville, that organization, with an opportunity to hire a minority coach, which, by the way, you know, I'm of the belief that you should just hire the best coach for the position. Mm-hmm. But I'm just saying, you know, that's an opportunity to be a team that gets to put that flag in the ground, you know. But also, I mean, just Byron Leftwich, I mean, what an opportunity to get the city of Jacksonville back in your stadium and really behind the team, Trevor Lawrence and everything along like, you know, those lines. But I guess I just didn't see Doug Peterson's name getting thrown around at all this year. Last year when he was fired, it was like, oh, he'll probably take a year off and he'll be back in the pool next year. I just didn't see it come. I mean, I had no idea they interviewed him, to be honest with you.
Right. Yep. And with Doug Peterson too, I mean, you hear people around the league talk about how just a great guy he is, and he's always very welcoming. So complete 180 of what Urban Meyer was in the culture there. I think this is going to be good for the Jacksonville Jaguars.
Saints hire defensive coordinator Dennis Allen as their new head coach. Respect that move. Hiring from within, that's opportunity that you want to be able to take. It's not like they, you know, fired Sean Payton. I doubt they were going to fire Sean Payton if he didn't retire. So I respect that move.
Yeah, and Dennis Allen, he's at least as a defensive coordinator, has had a lot of success. We always talk about how aggressive the Saints defense is and being able to get pressure on opposing quarterbacks. Now that they've got that out of the way, I think right now they're still projected to be over $70 million above the cap. So they got a lot of stuff to do in order to get under the cap, and we could see a lot of moves by the Saints before the league year starts.
Texans hire Former Bears and Buccaneers head coach Lovie Smith is their new head coach. Do you think did we interview Lovie Smith for the defensive coordinator position?
No, the Colts did not.
Okay. That was just we discussed about who we would like to see. Yeah, okay.
It was a possible candidate that we thought might be good, but as long as this isn't like what they did to David Culley, hire him for 1 year and then kick him to the road.
No, I don't think that's what this is at all.
I really like Lovie Smith. I think he's a great guy. Obviously, he took a defense that had pretty much broken pieces, and it was able to be kind of serviceable towards the end of the year. So I really hope this works out, and I hope Lovie Smith can get some stability. But then again, it's the Texans. It's always a bleep show.
So the Saints running back Alvin Kamara was arrested Sunday evening in Las Vegas for battery, resulting in substantial bodily harm. Shame on him. And hopefully whoever was injured is okay.
Apparently the altercation happened early Sunday morning, Saturday night into Sunday morning, before the Pro Bowl even. So the cops wanted to talk to him during the Pro Bowl, and after the Pro Bowl is when he was actually arrested. But I saw some pictures online of the other guy.
Can you imagine if they let those cops in to arrest that dude in the middle of the game?
Yeah. Oh, man. NFL would be not too happy about that. But the guy that – and obviously – we'll see what the end result is from this, but the pictures of the guy that got beat up, not pretty.
Not good. Okay. First Washington Commander to be arrested this offseason. Safety DeShazor Everett charged with involuntary manslaughter and car crash resulting in girlfriend's death. Well, as I finish that sentence, I feel bad about making a Washington Commanders joke. However, no, however, I do apologize.
We're getting into the part of the season or the off season now where a lot of bad news comes out. Yeah, it happens every year. It's very sad, especially a story like this where it resulted in his girlfriend's death. I don't know exactly all the details for it, but very, very sad.
The Vikings are hiring Ryan Grigson for a senior role in their football personnel department. I've also heard that the Vikings are making a huge mistake.
here's the comedic relief. So do we have a like laughter button on the soundboard?
Do we have a laughter button? Are you kidding me? Mix the two together a little bit. Wow, it's still laughing. Still laughing.
That's still the entire going. NFL just laughing at the Vikings for hiring Ryan Grigson to another executive role within an organization.
Munich will host their first ever regular season NFL game in Germany during the 2022 season. Frankfurt will also host future games. Are the Colts going to Germany? Is Andrew going to his next away game in Germany?
Oh, man, I'd have to get a passport. I don't even have a passport.
I'm working on that right now.
Hey. When is your prediction? What year will there be a NFL team overseas?
It'll be Jacksonville Jaguars within the next 5 to 10 years. I'll pick the team, brother.
Which I don't know
screws if screws us.
Well, I don't know.
Good thing though, because we can't win in Jacksonville. We might be able to win in London.
I honestly don't think it'd be a team that moves over there. I think what they would do is start two new teams. Not just one, but two. I think they would expand to 34, have one in London, and this thing starting up in Germany, have one in Munich. So then maybe Mexico City could be up. It's a lot of
Toronto.
There's plenty of options out there. But I do agree.
I do
with
believe
you.
The Jacksonville Jaguars will move across the pond
before 2030. I would expect an NFL team to be overseas. 2026, that's right around the corner.
It is right around the corner. Hey, guys, go, please, follow us. You know, just follow us at A Colts Podcast on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook. Like, subscribe on the YouTube. New subscribers, new viewers, thanks, and listeners, thanks for joining us. We appreciate you. Long time, all time listeners, appreciate you.
We're close to 500 followers on Twitter. So
nice.
If you don't follow us, go over there and follow a Colts podcast.
Darwin Moore with us from the beginning. Got to appreciate him. Maybe he's going to watch tonight or tomorrow. anything else from you, Andrew? What do you have to say to the fans? What do you have to say to the fans before the Super Bowl? Be safe. No drinking and driving.
Don't drink and drive. There's Uber out there.
You'll spill your beer. Also, it's illegal and you can hurt someone.
Enjoy the Super Bowl, enjoy a lot of wings, and go Bengals.
And go Rams. And Colts.
Let this moment become a cherished memory. And then remember, a legacy is only worthwhile when there is a future to fuel. God bless you, and God bless football.